Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
Greetings, friends, family, loved ones, hated ones. All walks of life, whether the lowest red to the brightest gold, welcome, my friends of Hyperion City, to the talkback of Iron Rising, a Starforged actual play. I am your presenter, Ace Bellerin, the best NPC of the campaign thus far. I will turn it over to the GMs / players.
You know, some say it's Dex.
Yeah, I think that we'll have to do a poll.
Yeah, we'll have to do a poll.
Well, we'll do a poll at the end and see.
One thing that wasn't stressed enough is that Dex doesn't have any eyes. As I'm like editing these episodes, I'm like, oh, we didn't talk about that enough. He has no eyes.
Yeah, we didn't. Oof.
We got to listen, season two.
We kind of mentioned this eyeless cat.
This eyeless cat. But this is the series talkback. We are finished with the series. Okay. A lot went down. Emotions were wrecked by the end of it. Absolutely devastated by the end of it.
Yes.
I did a lot of talking to my mother. And then she, but yeah, so
how did that go?
She was like, well, she doesn't know about TTRPGs, so, but I was trying to explain, like, you know, actors, and they really get into role. I compared it to not Jared Leto, Jesus, Heath Ledger as Joker.
Oh,
and
yeah,
how you just get so into a character and all that,
like a Daniel Day-Lewis too.
Yeah, and then like, how do you separate from that? Because the final episode really felt like I was, like my heart rate was beating fast. It was crazy.
Yeah, the sweat and tears were like really there.
Yeah, and I never experienced bleed that bad, but it wasn't bad. And I've been thinking about it and learning more about it, and it was more like creative grief, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, creative catharsis and like just, yeah.
It was because I knew logically that it was fiction, but my body and the things that we were doing and going through, it took a while for that to catch up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As a trained theater person, that is very much what happens when you are in a heated scene, whether it's with words or with actual like stage weapons or something like that. You know, as an actor, this is all fiction. This is a story. I'm not actually angry with this person I'm sharing a stage with, but your body still has real fight or flight.
Right. So when you're, not pheromones, but there's things that come up in your mind. I'm thinking of the word, something like activates or just gets heightened, like the adrenaline and stuff. So these are all still physical things your body's still going through. Even if you know logically, because you still have to get there.
So yes.
If I'm going like and breathing hard, my body's in the act of like being anxious or crying, or, you know.
Yeah, the brink of hyperventilating and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So how are we both feeling now that it's done?
Personally, I feel a bit of a bittersweet. Like, I'm very happy with the work that we did.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of the story we told. But, you know, it ends on a set really sad note with so many questions and so many launching points to where some things could go.
Yeah.
Or what sort of, like, the shockwave of consequences that will happen would just be really cool to explore.
Yeah. I think
so. Yeah, I think bittersweet.
Yeah, I would agree with you. If this was the only season, then I would fully agree with the bitter part. Let's say we only did one and it ended there. Oh man,
that would be brutal.
That'd be killer. Now that it's done, I guess I would agree. I would agree with you. It's a. It was fun, but it's.
It was taxing.
Yeah, I guess that's the word. I don't want to say it sucked, but like, there's so many bad feelings. You know what I mean? But like, it was all real and it was all raw.
Yeah, it was emotionally like it really pulled a lot of emotional energy.
Yeah,
and do you think in addition to mental energy?
Yeah. Do you think it helped all the prep that we did? Do you think it added to this feeling at the end of the day?
I think definitely had a hand in it. Absolutely. Especially because we knew from the beginning how we built these characters that the story was going to go a certain way.
Yeah.
So like, it was more of this, like, it's going to happen. Here it goes. Here it comes. Oh, we're in it. We're in it now.
It's going to happen. Just when and how.
Yeah. Just when and how. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because we, at the very beginning, our vows are so perfectly diametrically opposed.
Yep.
And it's absolutely crazy. So like the PvP was inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Which was very interesting to work around with Starforge because it's so much a cooperative, but it was kind of interesting to be cooperative, but also having ulterior motives.
I think if we're talking about mechanics and the system and stuff, that was the only sticking point, I would say. Because it's really it really does co-op so well. And so towards the end, we were splintering more and more.
And
we were going away from what the system is best at. And so I wouldn't say we were floundering, but it doesn't support PvP really. So we were just trying to figure out like, okay, do we create tracks for each other? It was a little odd, I would say.
I think it was, as a mechanics thing, it was one of the only few like little speed bumps we hit as we got to that splintering and that fracturing that we narratively were really getting into.
Yeah. And I think because this game is all about co-op, but most games are about that in like the TTRPG space. It's all about like working together. But we started off creating goals that are separate from each other.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to play with. And I think that was, I think that was fun.
Yeah.
But I knew that my goal was like, let's start from the top and then just completely break them down. Yeah.
Let's nosedive.
Yeah, let's just go that way. Because we could totally have just done the Rebels and we could have been like Reds.
You know? Yeah, we could have been Reds and it could have been the classic uprising, fighting the bad guys and the corporations and all that good stuff.
And yeah.
So it was an interesting choice for us to go from the top and flip that.
Nosedive. Another thing that I was thinking about is, did we have any early expectations versus what the show actually became? Is there anything that like changed wildly?
I don't think so. I feel like, if anything, we just colored it in. I don't think we knew how it was going to affect us in the end.
Yeah.
But I feel as though we kept a good trajectory of where we wanted point B to be from point A, where it's like, this is where it's going. Exactly like we said earlier, we knew the what, and we knew the what, and we knew the who, which is our characters. We just didn't know the when and the how.
Yeah. I think, because we were talking about it in our Discord server, we have the question of the day. One of them, today's was about like, how much do you prep versus just like, you know, going off the cuff and letting the ending be what it is naturally. And I said, my most satisfying campaigns are ones where I know what B is. And some people were like, you know, everybody does it their own way. And some people just let things flow naturally. But seriously, all my most awesome, amazing, most satisfying endings have been like something I have thought of already. And then I just present it to the players. I say, here's B. Let's get to it together. And you can get there in whatever way you want. And I think that's how we planned it, kind of.
Yeah.
I feel incredibly fulfilled, personally. but also feel devastated and crushed.
So you can feel both.
So what do you think about that?
Personally, I also am someone who likes to do enough preps that I can be loose, fast and loose on my ways between like A to B, B to C.
Yeah.
But like, as long as I know where my ending is,
yeah,
and I know where my beginning is, the middle can really just be open exploration, chaos, RP, whatever.
Yeah.
And even B doesn't like, it's not like I railroad necessarily. I know that that's something we've talked about before, like railroad versus sandbox.
Yeah.
Where I like the happy medium where it's like, I don't want to necessarily railroad a story, but I want to at least have a, I want to be in the ballpark of where I want it to go, but where we go in that ballpark can be played with.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I've also found players like a linear structure. And like, I won't say, I won't say railroad, but players have largely, if I've presented both options multiple times, always have chosen the linear one. Like they want like an actual, like, what's our goal?
They want a story.
Yeah, yeah. What's the thing we're working towards? I have found that they really don't want the sandbox, really. They maybe the illusion of it. I don't know.
Yeah, you could absolutely give the illusion of a sandbox. It's like that picture you see where like you see like the cow sees like two paths.
Yeah.
But the cow doesn't see that as the path keeps going, they go to the same place anyway.
Yeah. 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 I think that's it.
The illusion of choice.
It's the illusion of choice, and hey. These are all like fantasy made up games, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think mainly I learned this during this process because I am a prepper, a heavy prepper. I think it was like episode 3 or 4 where I was like, prepping too much. And then we were recording once and I already knew the outcome of a certain scene or something and it just didn't feel good. I didn't like to already kind of know what was going to happen. So I was like, okay, so we need to cut back on prep because
we got to reel it back to a little more fast and loose.
Yeah, yeah. It's difficult because this is a series that is short. And so you can't go full sandbox.
Correct.
So trying to find that happy medium was interesting. Do you have any favorite moments or surprises?
Honestly, some real surprises to me came, well, first off, just on a mechanical sense, the amount of match rolls that between the two of us that we had the entire campaign, I didn't think that was going to happen so frequently. And that just made those moments where they were big successes or, and you know, the one at the very beginning, like a big failure, just wildly impactful to the story. Like, it was really exciting to see them, but that's something that surprised me, but also delighted me, whether it was a failure or a success. It was a really cool moment each time we got one.
It was. It did feel good. Because I originally thought they were rare, and then I feel like there's at least 5 of them in this entire series, which is a good amount.
That's a lot, yeah.
My surprise was the amount of bleed I felt by the last recording session. I've honestly never felt it that strong before, ever.
I think we both had to walk away for a little bit and just kind of...
It was truly, and I explained to my mom and my sister, I said, it felt like having to say goodbye to an actual family member that you're really close to. And I thought of my sisters and I was like, oh my God, if I ever had to like separate from them in that way or something happened where their relationship just splintered and we separated from each other, I would be absolutely devastated and broken. And when I told them, they were like, aw. And I was like,
like, of course.
You love us. And I was like, what?
You're not understanding the point here.
Of course I love you guys. That's why I'm talking about it. So that was the biggest surprise for me in feeling that and like, what my body went through, doing more research on it and being like, okay, so what do other people do during this? Because this is crazy. I think next day, I was still feeling a little weird.
Oh, yeah. The emotional exhaustion. Yeah. Or sometimes you can be so moved by something. Mm-hmm. There's a fire engine going by. I'm not sure if it's being picked up.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah. But like, I know, like, I've gotten, as a performer, I've gotten like really bad headaches the following day or things like that, just from like the amount of tension in my body, in my jaw, in my head from like really tense scenes. And I definitely felt a bit of that during this finale where like I definitely felt the tension where I normally feel tension when I'm either real life stressed and emotionally like drained or as a performer, same thing.
Yeah. So it was crazy for me. Was it, have you felt it? Was this like the worst you've ever felt it? Or you're like, I felt this type before. It's not new.
I would say as far as with TTRPGs that I've played or run,
yeah,
this was the most intense.
Oh, out of TTRPGs. Okay.
Because
we got pretty intense in Electric State Season 2.
Yeah, I think this goes just a little further.
Okay, yeah.
I think especially because it was just the two of us.
Yeah, I think it's more intimate when it's just a two-person co-op and with the amount of prep we did, we went hard on the prep. Like, we put so much hours into just building out the world and the characters.
So, yeah, like, we were walking in these characters' shoes and living their lives for so long. Like, it was so very easy to fall into bleed and feel that. But, yeah, as far as TTRPGs, this is the most intense I've felt. Is like, as far as, like, that emotional attachment and tension, friction, fallout.
So if we can get into the characters and the bleed a little bit more.
Okay.
Is there anything that we learned more about our characters the more we played? Specifically in the series, because I know we did the couple like practice sessions, you know.
We did.
Learn more about them, but it went even deeper in the series, I think.
It did.
I think the flashback episode was actually a really good, like, solidifier, like shaping of our characters even more.
Yeah, I would agree. Something that I picked up on that I didn't think was going to be a trait of Dorian's would be how cunning he was going to end up.
Towards the end?
Yeah, I think he was always going to be an intellectual, but like intellect and cunning, I feel like are two different things. With cunning comes like opportunistic.
Yeah.
Sometimes manipulative, sometimes controlling.
Do you think that's a thing he's going to fall into more, or is it just in that moment?
I think there's potential for him to lean more into it because I think there's been a part of him that's wanted to deviate from the laws of the law of the seven. I think because it's just there's just been so much wrong with it in his eye and what he's like, you know, experienced and believes. I think he would, especially because what ends up happening with him, I think whether he wants to or not, he has to lean into it. Because that's what is going to hopefully keep him alive. It's not going to be just how smart he is. He's going to have to be cunning. He's going to have to think in a way that is not always comfortable because it can be manipulative, controlling, sometimes malicious, you know, cold and calculating. Like,
I mean, that's the world he grew up in, though. So he's probably just leaning into what he knows.
Yep.
And I think you can't, because it's going to be a tougher world on his end. It's like you can't be like green or gullible or naive, I think.
No, I think that part of him died in the Dreadnought.
You think so?
Yeah, I think the being naive is just done.
I didn't find him naive.
What's
the word when you just want the best, but it's like not realistic? Like altruistic, maybe?
Optimistic?
I guess optimistic, but like I found him wanting, you know, you're just like, oh, I just want the best, so let's do it this way. And you're like, okay, so that works for this side of things. But then there's always a there's always a counterbalance, right? So something has to go down because of this good thing that you're trying to do.
That's true. Then I guess altruist would probably be what it was.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if he realizes that. Like, okay, let's say he does liberate all the Reds. What's the consequence of that? Which is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because it can't all be sunshine and rainbows just because you liberated them. That's going to be interesting.
It will absolutely be interesting. Were there parts of Celine that surprised you?
What'd you say?
Were there parts of Celine or things that came up as Celine that surprised you?
I feel like I played her pretty faithful. No. Parts of her.
You knew everything.
Parts of her that surprised me. I don't know. I feel like I was pretty faithful to her character. I'm trying to think of anything that surprised me that I played her as. So maybe surprised that she didn't kill Ross at the end.
Yeah, that surprised me.
But only a little bit, because at the end I was like, well, her job, she's all about her job. Finish the job. Mm-hmm. And the job wasn't to kill him. So that was all. But then the other part was her, like, she wanted to like shove it in Dorian's face.
Mm-hmm. It was the desire to hurt.
Yeah, it was. She just wanted to pulverize him. So mm-hmm. like I said, her hand was like on his neck. And with the gauntlets, all the power would have just.
Oh, yeah. Full explosion.
That's what she wanted to do. Maybe I'm surprised that she didn't, because I could have, because we could have went there.
We could have.
And then I don't know where the story would have went after that. So are there any choices that we think redefined our characters? Well, when I think of that, you were more cunning, especially in the last episode. You were doing a lot of moves, like sneaky stuff.
Yep.
When I was talking to Ross, I was like, where the hell is Dorian? Because you were like, Dorian left. And I was like, what?
Yeah, Dorian went full sci-fi ninja.
I thought at that moment you had completely like reneged on your deal to help her. And like, it was betrayal at that moment. I thought that's when you decided that Dorian's going to betray her.
Oh.
That's what was fully going through my head when you were like, Dorian's not here. And I was like, okay, so this is it.
This is it. We're doing this.
This is when he does it.
This is it. This is the thing.
But you know, you waited 15 minutes and then you did it.
Yeah.
What do we think about the Ross reveal? Should it have been bigger, or?
I think we took an episode and a half to deal with the Ross reveal. Between, and actually 2.5 episodes, the end of the episode when we find out that Ross and Dorian were friends, with the little tidbits in the previous episodes, like just like maybe a couple of minutes of it learning,
yeah,
to the full reveal, to the flashback of the friendship, to the ramifications afterward, to the efforts to mitigate the collateral at the end.
Well, okay, so what about the reveal of Ross at the end, like do you think people are going to think it's not realistic enough that there was nobody else in there with him inside of that big, like, cavernous space? You remember that scene?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of it, I think, is that was part of the Dorian's play, was saying, you know, that there was definitely no one else there with him because, you know, that they were evacuating. And I think in a lot of ways, Ross was similar to Dorian, but was not cunning enough and was more altruistic and was more self-sacrificing.
I think I would agree that he's probably more self-sacrificing than Dorian.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Completely, two completely different upbringings. And even though you care for Reds more, you're still gold.
Yeah, I'm not a Red.
Yeah. And so.
That scene between Celine and Ross was very fun to play.
Oh, at the end?
Yeah, that scene between the two of them was really cool.
I just remember being frustrated because I wanted to punch the talk right out of his mouth. Because I was like, oh, this guy keeps talking. I don't care. Bam! I have a job to do.
Skip the cutscene.
Well, you know, you hold the X button and then you see the little circle load to skip.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool and I was like, I'm going to 1-2 punch him. And then Dorian's like,
you didn't have to do that.
His head almost turned around. I like that scene too. Part of me, because I'm always like thinking about the audience and stuff, but I have to remind myself, if we thought it was fun, if we thought it was cool, it's fine.
Exactly.
But I was thinking, oh, does this make sense that he's doing this? Does this make sense that they're doing that? Because I always want to be as realistic as possible. And if he's the leader of all these Reds, would they really just leave him? Because you said, you're like, Dorian says, like, you could take me. And then they just leave. And they listen to you like you're the leader now.
I think how that works is because with Ross giving himself up,
yeah,
he's already won. He's already going to be seen as a martyr.
Is that the goal?
I think that is the goal.
I mean, that would possibly get a lot of Reds to rise up.
Yeah, it absolutely would.
If he's martyred.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, as of right now, he's still alive, everybody.
He's still alive and captive, yeah.
So who knows where the story goes?
Mm-hmm.
So when the bleed hit the hardest, do you think it was all performative or were there real emotions coming in as well? Or do you need real emotions and that's what causes bleed? Right?
I would say it's the latter. I think you really get into an emotional state when you are experiencing it as a character. And I think I've talked to you about this before, where like you still try to keep that 10% actor or a 10% player in the back of your brain being like, this is fiction, remember that. Yeah. But sometimes it's hard to hear that 10% actor because you are really living in the moment. Like,
episode 8, where I was like, my heart rate was beating so fast because I was so in it. And there would be moments where we'd have to still play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you would start talking about mechanics. Or I'd have to break out of Celine and go to an NPC who's not feeling her feelings. And it was hard because it's like whiplash a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, jumping between them was wild.
Yeah. That's what's crazy. Just behind the scenes. I'm so in Celine and the bleed is happening for sure. And then you're like, I'm going to call, what's his name? Our handler.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh snap. Okay. I'm going to have to be the handler. Snap out of Celine.
Be Marin for a minute.
Yeah. Be Marin. Okay. Hold on. And then snap back to Celine. Like, it's a lot. And especially when bleed is coming in, it's like, you know, maybe we could have took a second or something, but we were like so in it. So it was very snappy.
Do you know it moved snap decision to snap decision. Yeah.
Okay. You understand what I mean?
Like, yeah.
The switching?
Yeah. You went from a very dramatic scene. You had to literally go change costume real quick and come out as a completely different character while still feeling the previous. Yeah.
Or when we'd have to, you'd ask me a question about mechanics or something, because this game is about like, You can try to be in character as much as possible with the system, but at some point you do have to talk about what decisions you're making mechanically.
Yeah, what roles you're making and then what the outcome will be.
Right, so you have to talk about it. And so you would be making mechanical moves. And I know that I have to snap out of it to like, like co-op yeah. with you right now. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Give me a sec.
Hold on, I am extremely angry right now, but it's not real. It's so trippy. It's so trippy.
Hard agree.
But fulfilling at the same time, it's weird. Another thing that we had was this sibling dynamic, or just in general, the dynamics of love, duty, ideology. Do you think the season like spoke to those themes well? Like, we set that up, and I
think it very much does.
Okay.
And it's just the two characters' point of views of those things came to a breaking point.
I really would have loved if Lucinda answered the phone.
Wow, that is a moment that surprised me, because the odds of Lucinda picking up versus Magnus was literally in Lucinda's favor, and yet she did not pick up and Magnus did. And then, like, well, guess I'm playing the dad.
Well, that's what makes me think things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
When stuff like that, when you're like, I had the lowest chances of this happening and it did. And I had the highest chances of something else and it didn't. But season two, we definitely got to get her in there. That's one scene where I would like to do, like, if we did like a, what's something that people do like in between seasons, but it's not a full
interlude.
Is it an interlude? It's like an extra episode. It's like a little something extra.
A filler? Well, not necessarily a filler, because fillers aren't usually canon.
Yeah. But, it's like a, I don't know, it's not a throwaway either. But anyway, sometimes they'll just do like little fun stuff between seasons. I would love to do like a Lucinda thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dive into that, how she felt about both of us. Because there was one point where, this was a good scene, when Dorian was like, said something about how she's always hated me.
Mm-hmm.
And that shocked me. And I was like, oh my God, he feels that way? That was a crazy comment. That was wild.
I think, as Dorian, I think he was very attached to Magnus, his father, but always knew that, like, because of the choice he made to keep, like, the mechanical pieces and the way that Lucinda is all about, like, decorum and appearance and how you look, that she would always have a resentment for that. And in turn, as a child, you think, oh, it's not the choice I'm making that as resented, I'm being resented.
Yeah. So. And kids can feel it. Like, you don't have to say anything, but there is an aura about you or a vibe that you'll still give off. You don't even have to say anything. And kids can know immediately.
Yeah, they pick up.
They'll pick it up immediately how this, like, your aura or vibe when you walk into a room. If it's aggressive, kids will notice that immediately. You don't have to. And so if she felt any resentment, I think that would have been like a little seed planted in you, festering for years and years and years. She never has to say, I hate you.
No.
I don't think she does, though. Or maybe I just don't want her to.
We don't know if she didn't pick up the phone.
Okay. If she picked up the phone, come on. Okay, just humor me. What? Just one thing she would have said. Why are you calling this late?
No, she wouldn't. I don't think she would have been bothered by that. I think she would have been
bothered. Don't you have a job to do? Why are you calling me?
Yeah, because she would be more, because she's very career oriented. I think she would have been like, if you have to ask me for advice, then you are already failing.
Ooh, you're right.
Yeah, one of those.
God damn it, she would say that.
Yeah, she would.
Yeah, that whole, if you're calling me, you've already lost.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, she has a good comebacks. That was good. Are there any scenes that still sit with you emotionally that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I think a scene that still sits with me is the big, like, the, not, well, obviously the end, but we've talked a lot about the end.
Yeah.
But I think a scene that sits with me a lot is the scene where the lie comes out.
Oh, that's the end.
And
that's it. That's the end of episode three.
Yeah. The end. And
so good.
And then the fallout of that, where Dorian is trying to explain himself, but like Selene refuses to listen. But it's very understandable, where it's like the person who has lied wants to explain it. Whether it's for good reason or not, it's still a lie. And it still hurts that other person. So, as a player and a person, Michael felt bad. Felt guilty. Being like trying to explain, this is why this lie had to be there.
Yeah.
And went through multiple stages of that, where like there were points when he was trying to be calm and logical. Then he lashed out.
Yep.
Then he said hurtful words. Then he used bargaining, and that's what made it work. And that's what, like, unfortunately, was the one that worked.
Yeah, he also brought up her secret.
Yep,
with the violet, and I was like, you know, it's not the same. Yeah. I think, yeah. So I guess episode five is the crash, I believe. I'm getting some mixed up. I think it's the end of episode three where the truth is revealed. Episode four is the flashback.
No, four is the lie. Five is the flashback. Oh, okay. Six is the crash out.
So yes, yeah. Okay, so the end of episode four, and then episode five is a flashback. And so episode six is not even, that's when we finally resolve it.
Mm-hmm. We had a whole flashback to do before we had to resolve it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was a really good decision. I think originally we were only going to do six episodes, but I really was like, we need something more. I feel like we were rushing a little bit.
Agreed. We needed more space, and I think it was a good move to push to add two more episodes worth of content.
Yeah. And I guess I really loved the flashback with Celine, but I had a lot of fun playing as Ross with Dorian and him.
That was a great scene.
It just felt so good. Like, and it was very thematic of just the entire series. And it felt good to be in somebody's shoes who's a role that I would have actually usually played, like the downcast person who's trying to rebel and live up. But I'm playing someone who doesn't care and still needs to go through heavy conditioning. Like,
yeah,
she needs a good
rewiring of the brain.
Yeah. So it was good to play someone who could have been another character archetype that I played.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe Ross can get to Celine before she breaks him.
Or maybe Celine gets to Ross.
Or
or they fall in love on the ship back to perfect it. I'm kidding. Yeah, that was a really good scene. And I think it was played really well. It felt very genuine and honest. Like two friends who were like, we're making our decisions now and there's no going back.
Yep. No more games. Time for real.
Yeah. And it was like you guys were playing an actual game, but we were also talking about the game of life. Like, I think that episode has so much like symbolism in it. And that's why I really, really like it. When he's like, this is the, not the Queen's Gambit, but this is the final.
The Fool's Gambit.
This is the Fool's Gambit. And Ross is like, I can't talk anymore. We can't talk anymore. Like, you can't talk to your father anymore. It is, this time is up. And and I like that. I like that so much. But yeah, let's go to the next little section that I have on my notes about behind the scenes, the creative process.
Okay.
Do we have like a favorite? Oh, well, I mean, I'm editing it, so... Do you have like a favorite kind of production or editing decision? You've heard some stuff at this point, like music, pacing, ambiance. Is there anything that you're like, this sounds cool so far from what I've listened to?
You have a very excellent talent for finding the right undertones and or underscores for scenes.
I love music.
Yeah. It's very, very, yeah, very apparent that you are passionate about it and attaching it. And I'm also someone who enjoys great music and ambiance to things. So always has been inspiring and impressive. And I, from what I've listened to so far, even like from some of the earlier stuff, just like, you know how to take a scene and not, and just, I guess, give it more dimension with the music. Where like, it's not just the words or the narration that is giving the immersion, but the music, the sounds also give that immersion.
Yeah, I think they go hand in. I think it's part of storytelling. Like a story, and more of the story is made in the edit, I think. Like we're just doing one part and then you take it behind the scenes and you add on to the story. Don't add too much. You don't want to, you don't want to flesh away what we've already created. An editing choice, I think I sent it to you, was a clip of Dorian and, Reverie? I was going to say Remedy. It's Reverie, right?
Reverie, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There was a moment where she went to go give him a hug. And yeah. I added in like a... so far, that scene, I believe it's episode three, where we're doing more investigation. We're in the Blue District. And you task her to help. And so far, the music has been like tense, investigation-y, mystery. And then it kind of just stops for a second. And then I add in like a soft piano because you could, I imagine things like a movie. So I can see him like standing there shocked. And then you hear like a key of the piano. And it's very soft and it's calm because he doesn't feel this type of love that much.
Exactly.
And it's not the time for investigation-y. It could have even been silent, but I just like the sound of like a soft guitar string plucking or the piano.
Soft keys, yeah. I also like that.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then I did add some stuff you haven't heard yet, but I did add some bleeps and bloops for your octopus friend. What's his name?
Oh, Icarus.
Icarus.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, so he's like, it sounds like he's replying to you. And it's
that's incredible. I can't wait. I love Icarus so much.
Icarus is great. You're a little, then there's the crab.
Yep. Ajax. They both got before the drama really hit, those two got to do some really cool stuff.
They did. Do you have ideas for another asset? If you're going to grab another one?
I've been thinking, and I think for survivability and things like that, I would probably enhance my augmentation, and probably when you enhance your augmentation card, you create another augment.
Oh, okay.
Like a separate augment, so you could. And I'm like,
you're like turning into Atom Smasher.
A little bit.
You're turning more robotic.
Oh. To survive and also to be like the bridge between humans and reds.
This guy. Okay.
And that, and I'm still attached to the battle armor because I think it might protect him from Celine.
Oh.
Well, not necessarily Celine, but probably from.
Nope, Celine.
Celine.
I have ideas. I don't know if I want to say it now. I don't know if I want it to be a surprise or not, because I have a really cool idea for the next asset she's going to grab.
Oh, okay.
It's a little scary.
I mean, I just gave these ones that I was thinking about. But if you want to keep it a secret, that's fine.
I have it too. Okay. Do you want to know?
You know, even if you tell me, it's not like I'm going to like, that's it. I'm going to counter this or something like that. That's not how I work.
I have a lot of ideas for season two. One of them is that there is a wanted poster, a high reward for Dorian all over the city.
Oh, yeah.
All over the city. So I want to get a Blade Master or a companion. And I'm going to get Blade Master, I want to get Faye's knives that she can shoot out with her abilities.
Ooh, so that's cool.
They're like sharp daggers, sleek, silent blades that are, I think, stored in her gauntlets.
I love that.
I was thinking about that. But also a companion bot. I kind of like but it's a bird. So it looks like the shape of the Calvaris symbol, almost.
Ooh, yeah.
Detaching from her body. It's about the size of a hawk. And that would be her companion bot, like folds into like a cross shape configuration and then like can go into her armor. And then when she activates it, it detaches and then flies above.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah, that's rad as hell.
Hopefully you can fire out some small, sharp knives, something. Dorian said it. He's like, he kept saying in episode 8, you're a weapon.
Like that's what Ross kept saying.
Oh, was it Ross or Dorian?
Ross. Ross kept calling Celine a weapon.
Okay, I just remember somebody kept saying it. And then she's like, okay, if I'm a weapon, I'm going 110%.
Oh no, Ross got to her.
Oh snap.
Sanguis populi, the blood of the people. The dark protectors of the hidden city of Azeroth, deep within the illusory forest. Familiar with death as they have eluded it, they are called upon for a desperate task. Slaying a creature from the great beyond. Blythe.
This might not be easy, being surrounded by death. I don't understand how they can do it.
Elvira.
Someone must watch the bodies, and none do so as diligently.
Swan.
Into action so fast. I love when we get to go out.
It came from the sky. This great, pale monstrosity.
You just had to sate your hunger. You couldn't have saved it for the beasts.
I prefer the gratuity.
Vampirism is not immortality. It only prolongs the inevitable. Is this the end for Sanguis Populi? Blood in the snow. A tale yet told. Halloween 2025.
Sorceress, lower the barrier for just a moment. Sanguis Populi departs.
Listen to Tale Is Yet Told wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess he did. Is there anything else that we learned? Like, let's just, like, behind the scenes and, like, prep wise, this whole type of series, is there anything that you learn that you want to take into your other games in terms of, like, how things are structured?
Something that I really enjoyed and that I definitely would take moving forward is the different game modules you introduced and the stuff we did to really flesh out Hyperion City with the
100%.
I can't believe it's not street magic,
yeah.
Microscope, like all that stuff really gave so much more life to some of these locations that we had, so that it was easy for us to paint word pictures when we did scenes in those places.
Oh, 100%. And we did it for another campaign that we're going to do. And it's great. Like, Microscope is... I don't think we did Microscope.
Not for this, no. But we did Street Magic for this.
Yeah, I don't know if we needed... Because Starforge has its own kind of, like, history. The Truths is, like, mm-hmm. its own version. But it didn't have, like, a flesh-out city. Kinda did?
Flesh-out city, but, like, also, like, create these little vignettes and, like, these other, like, little NPCs and these little, yeah. like, locations or something within the location that... are of importance of some for some reason, and we ended up using some of them.
Yeah. But I'm sorry, did you say street magic? Like, you go so in depth, and each location has an NPC, and then there's a rumor, and then you flesh out, like, what people feel about this district, and it is so much fun.
Yeah.
I had so much fun. But yeah, world building stuff. I want to do that, like, before campaigns, almost going forward.
Yeah, and not only is it great to fill the world, but I feel like it's also a good way to start playing with the people you're going to tell the story with. And
yeah, it makes it all very, like, the collaborative feeling that you get is so instant, too. Like, as soon as, like, Microscope was a really good example. Like, we were just flowing off of each other and our ideas and each era. So, yes, highly recommend world-building tools. Extra, if you... Starforge has good world building tools already.
But, yeah, the has it built in.
But we just found some extra stuff, and it really gave us a really good foundation. Is there anything else? This is a very specific situation because this is 8 episodes. It's a little bit higher caliber than a regular actual play.
Yeah, I will say that I think. Our practice sessions really helped us establish the characters' relationships. So we came into episode 1 having a very strong character relationship that was very natural and believable and felt
like, lived in.
Yeah.
I think we could have pulled it off.
Like, I think we could have, but I think it certainly helped that we had that because, like, we had the characters' voices, we had the way they walked, the way they talked.
Yep.
And yeah.
It really did help. Do you think that's a thing that people should... Sometimes you just want to run a one shot, you know? But
yeah.
What do you think this is a... For actual play specifically, do you think this is a good thing to do?
I think it is. I think it's a good way to play with the ideas that you have before you start recording.
Yeah.
So that you as the player and or the GM or both in this case can decide, I like the way this character speaks or I don't like it. I want to change it up or I don't like how this... mechanic works for this character. I think I'm more passionate about this approach. so you could have those tweaks, like having a test run.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than figuring out by episode 3 of the actual play, of like the actual like recording, because you can make all the tweaks that you want, like before. And I know it's a lot of prep beforehand, and I know sometimes you just want to get to the game because the game is so fun, but I mean, we had fun with the prep side. I don't know.
Oh yeah. I was saying, I have also listened to actual plays where people change their character completely as the campaign's going, and everyone just like, part of it is a joke, but then part of it me is being like, why are you doing this?
Is it the person who made the joke character?
Somewhat, yeah.
Sometimes that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they'll make like Dickface McClown.
Yeah.
And episode 6, they're like, well, it's not fun.
It's not fun anymore. I'm going to actually play seriously.
Which is what I should have done. So the other thing that I have, I put how trust and communication shape the tone. I think that's a big one. I think because we played together. Well, the main other game that we played together was, well, Hanashira.
We played Hanashira.
And then we, Electric State was the first one. So mm-hmm. kind of built up from there. So all that experience, what do you think it did for this game?
What it did for this game is it, from at least from my end, it allowed me to know that I completely trust you, Maia, as a player and as a GM to mm-hmm. be able to bounce ideas off of, provide ideas for me to bounce off of, and to communicate when things are going well or when things need to like pivot, like when yeah. we were like, we're prepping too much, where we should pivot. And it made me feel 100% comfortable to play in that world with you. And also because we really started with something like with Electric State, we really started with something that's very dark, very mature, very brutal.
We jumped head first in.
Yeah.
And I think it's because, well, first you already have experience. I don't think Electric State, if you're going to play it how I think it's intended to be played, I don't mm-hmm. know if it's like for your TTRPG newbie, you know?
No, it is not.
These are some intense themes in that game. And that's the first one we played.
Yep. And I'll say it goes back even to the first little like intro session we did together where we introduced my Electric State character.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we've filled that whole scene with people, places, things, moments.
Yep.
Mostly from scratch. So the fact that we were going to do that, but with actual prep, gave me a lot of excitement.
Yeah. And then also, we did Liminal Horror, another intense yeah. game where I beat the crap out of you.
And, yep.
I genuinely love listening back to that series, that little mini series.
That Liminal Horror was so much fun.
That was so fun. So yeah, we've had all this stuff, and I think it helps for sure. I hope it comes across in this series, like the chemistry that's there, the organic like time that we have spent together. And I hope yeah. it shows that like we're not new to each other. I mean, we're not old because we met this year and I can't remember the date we met to save my life. Was it this year or was this year?
It was very
early.
Very early. I want to say it was like, or was it November? Was it November when we first met? And then started.
We could look at our Discord chat.
I'm sure we could look at the Discord chat. Yeah, but that's fine.
I don't think it's been a year yet.
It has not been a year yet, I don't think.
But the stuff that we've been through has kind of like streamlined the trust factor, just like way up.
Yes, the trust factor, the play factor, the like collaboration, the yeah. like the nurturing like co-artist factor, like all of that.
Yeah. So I think that is another thing that if people are going to create something like this or tell these types of intense stories where bleed is going to happen, like trust is a very good one. You really need to feel comfortable with the person you're going to be collaborating with.
And yeah, because you're going to very vulnerable places and so you have to be
very, very much yeah. so. And communicate. And if something is making you feel uncomfortable, just say it. And hopefully you're playing with someone who is comfortable enough and flexible enough to pivot and be understanding about certain things.
1,000%.
Yeah. Is there anything that we would experiment with next time? Like format, sound? Well, that's me. Or the structure of it, anything? I guess we learned like prep is that we were prepping too, it was too heavy-handed. So next time it's just, but we found a good fix.
We found a happy medium between like knowing what to pull back and to know like not to put the field goal like in an exact spot, but to just like put the field goal within a range. That's like where we kind of figured it out.
And like, if we're speaking specifically, what we did was we had recording sessions that were split into two. So we would record block A, then we would take a 15-minute break, record block B. And for each block, we would just have an episode goal.
Like a beat to hit. Yeah.
And that was it. Before, we had too many things that, you know, we want to have this scene, and this person is going to do this or say this. And it was like,
we want this choice to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, too much. Just have the goal at the top of the session and then just try to meet that by the end of it.
Strong emphasis on the word try, because you never know.
But I think we were both responsible about the time. And I think that's another thing that's good is have someone who's going to take that time seriously as well.
Yes, that is huge, especially for actual play, being conscious of time and how long it takes. And I think even though both of us were like really trying to be like, damn, we got to get that timer started at a different point or something like that, we were both pretty conscious of like how long it was going, even when in the heat of these like emotional scenes, being like, okay, we know we're in like the last 10 minutes of this, but boy, am I sweaty.
Yeah. I think I heard Brennan Lee Mulligan say like, what makes it an actual play is like the time. The timer, mm-hmm. you know, is like, yes, it is. It's the countdown. Yep. That's what makes this, what makes it an actual play, because goddamn if my eye isn't always on the clock in like the lower right of my computer all the time.
1,000, yep.
But I think you should be, but also let's say you're not doing an actual play. You should be mindful of people's time, you know, maybe somebody needs a break. Maybe it's hour 3.5.
And people have been sitting. People need to stretch. People are tired, hungry, want to order food. Yeah.
Yeah. Be like me personally, I kind of tap out mentally after like hour 3. So just, even if I was just at a home game with people, I'd be like, I'm kind of, you guys, my brain is mushy now.
Let's take a break.
But with an actual play, it's even more heightened because you're thinking about time, but you're also thinking about what that goal that you need to hit by the end. So
in addition to all the production stuff, like everything happening all at once, in addition to the clock.
Yeah. So having a good collaborator to help out with that, having a good partner. Hey, you're going to take this, focus on this. I'll focus on this, blah, blah, blah. Which I think we did really well. We took like we each had our part that we played.
Yeah. We each had our parts and we each like took the helm at certain points and then there were times we would hold one hand of the helm and just go together.
And then episode 8, we were both, I was pulling down this way and then you were pulling down this
pushing
way
up.
And then the helm just broke, actually.
Yeah.
And then it broke.
As we always knew it was gonna.
We knew. Somebody did ask me like, how are we technically, how are we handling NPCs? How would you explain that?
I would say I think we became very good at knowing when to provide one.
Yeah.
When one character was doing a scene or when another character was doing it, I think we were both very conscious of when to provide one. Mm-hmm. And knowing like they didn't need to have not all of them had to have fully three-dimensional complex things. Some of them had to just be someone you spoke to, you were questioning, a guide. And then when we had more complex NPCs like Ross or KL or Reverie or Magnus.
Or whatever like, Ace Bellerin turned into.
Or whatever Ace Bellerin. Ace Bellerin's a special anomaly.
Literally pulled that guy out of nowhere.
Literally nowhere.
No notes in any world building lore anywhere.
Nope. He just decided to walk into reality and now he's here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But But with our more complex characters, I think we were both very respectful of the other's like depictions of that character. Like we both had an agreement of like what Magnus would behave like, how he would speak. Yeah. We were both in agreement of like how our handler guy would be and how he would behave. And then when, you know, KL was an NPC you created to be very important to Celine. So I asked like, what ways can you describe this character to me so I can really embody this character so that it is satisfying for you who created them, but also as the character to play with them. And you did the same thing for me with Ross.
Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, there was moments where Celine was like investigating. And then I was like, what we did really well is that because we were very locked in, and it's only us two, so we kind of have to be. What we did really well is that I would say there, I see someone or something, and you would immediately be like, oh, and her name is this, and she looks like this, and do-do-do. And then I would do the same for you in different situations. When you would walk into the room and you say, Reverie's here, and I'd be like, I would know in my mind, okay, yep, I'm Reverie. Like, we would just know immediately, and that's...
It was an offer given, yeah.
Yeah, and after a while, we didn't really... We would ask, like, hey, how should I play KL? What's Reverie like? What's Ross like? But it kind of just became, like, second hat after a while. When I needed to talk to a blue, like, off to the street, I'd be like, so I see two blues that are out eating lunch, and I'm going to approach them. And we didn't stop to be like, hey, can you play those NPCs?
No, it was already, it's like, well, yeah, you're the PC in this moment. Like, the spotlight's on Celine at the moment, so I'm going to step in and play whatever else Celine needs to get through this scene until it's either resolved or we pivot to another scene.
Right, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, flashback scenes, we were each other's key NPCs, and it worked out really well. Or if you're talking to anybody, if you're trying to get a drink, or you were in a... Because I remembered editing it, but Dorian was in a... probably like a hover taxi, and you were talking to the taxi driver.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, I did like a couple lines as a taxi driver.
Yeah, it was easy. Perfect.
Because you started talking to him. So I go, yeah, he's not going to talk to himself. I'm going to be the taxi driver.
Yeah.
So that was one thing, one little technical thing that we did talk about actually in session zero, because I was wondering, how do we want to play this out? So again, session zero is important. Communication. Get all the technical stuff out of the way.
Session zero is mandatory.
Mandatory. Even if, like, we've played together, so the session zero really wasn't about, like, lines and veils, per se. It was, I think it was, like, all technical.
It was mostly technical scheduling, some logistics, and, like, also, like, early, like, creativity nuggets being planted.
Yeah. But, yeah, so now... We're going to go into our final segment. We're going to talk about season two a little bit, any ideas, but we also have questions for each other, okay? So we have three questions we're going to ask back and forth. I have technically more than three, but I will choose my favorite.
Okay.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
I'm going to go right at the door and I'll ask you the first question.
Okay.
Okay. Through your time walking in Celine's shoes, was there anything that Celine chose to do that Maia disagreed with? Like, was there any time when, after a scene where Celine made a choice, that you, Maia, was like, I can't believe I did this? Or did you feel like she did exactly what you wanted her to do? You know what I'm saying? Like, was there moments where, like, Celine took over as far as like choices that were made versus like what Maia wanted? Like, are there any choices you made as Celine that you question now that you wish you could go back and change?
I know immediately.
Yeah.
It was after the crash out, first injuring Dex and that collateral damage. Horrible. Mm-hmm. Felt horrible. But it was realistic for her in that moment. And then same episode when she kind of threatened Dorian and said, I will end you. And then the Kel'Varis line, that was really mean to me. I felt like that was so mean. Mm-hmm. And I knew that she didn't mean it. And that's why in the next episode, next episode,
there's a little bit of patching up.
She's like, I'm sorry. That's probably a little bit of me coming through. She apologizes that she's like, I would never hurt you, but I think that's true for her. But yeah, so that's the first thing that comes to mind is like, oh God. I definitely, those are the two things that I didn't agree with, but made sense for her character. Those are rough. Okay, so when did the sibling dynamic feel most real to you?
There were a couple of moments for me.
Okay.
One moment where it really resonated with me was between episodes, the earlier parts of the episodes, when Dorian first got, when I fold that first like fail with a match where Dorian's part of his eye exploded.
Yeah.
And he needed treatment and he needed care. And the split of like Celine wanting to help and doing everything she could, and then also at certain points being helpless and not knowing what to do, but wanting to help. That felt so very human and real to me, being like, you know, when you care about somebody and you're like, they're in the operating room and you don't know what to do to help. So you're just going to stand there and watch and just like almost feel like paralysis.
Yeah.
So that felt very real when it's like, you know, I could see myself being at the ER, you know, if my brother was in a car accident or something, like not knowing what to do, but just be there for him, get him what he wants when he can, like go get him a Coca-Cola or a snack if he wants it, because I can't put an IV in or out or like do X-ray or something like that. But that felt very real to me. And in episode 7, with the apology and like the two of them talking in the room, we both have siblings. I'm sure you've probably had those moments where, like you've had a lash out with your sibling,
yeah.
And then later on, you're both just kind of quiet, just being like, "Sorry for whatever."
Yeah. You want a slice of pizza?
Yeah, like you want a slice of pizza. You want to play? You want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
You want to watch TV? Like, yeah, like that sort of like that's how siblings apologize. Like they have to do an activity or something together, yeah. And then that breaks the ice to go back to the thing that caused them to fight.
In our case, we immediately went into episode 8 and it just got worse.
Yeah.
But there they tried.
They tried.
Okay.
Okay. Were there any connections other than Dorian that you think that you would have wanted to have more time to explore during this campaign, that like if there were to be a second campaign that you'd want to explore more? I mean, we kind of answered a little bit of it, but I guess this is more in depth, because this is like something I wrote down. It's like, you know, because we both really fleshed out a lot of different characters that some of them didn't even get to make it into this season.
I know. Yeah. I mean, Lucinda Calvarez is number one. I would have, but we just didn't have enough time, and would love, definitely, if there's a season 2, definitely got to get her in episode 1, you know. But also like her mentor, she has her kinetic mentor, who's very he's very much like a father figure to her. Like he's kind of like the male version of her mother, so that's probably why she likes him.
Yeah,
likes him so much. So him or her like horrible her rival
who was in the prequel.
Yes, he was in like those prologue sessions and lots of fun.
Especially yeah, when, he was. When you, it was fun to play.
Yeah, when you were playing him, I was like, "Oh, this guy sucks. I love it."
Mm-hmm.
And that guy is just so messy, and he's always ready to like. It just sucks that he also has kinetic abilities, but he uses it to showboat and for fear and blackmail and stuff like that. You know, could have been cool to see him too.
He'll be the first one to rub it in Celine's face with this scandal.
Oh my god, then he's probably definitely in season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no way. He's not a Celine's an enforcer, but he's not, but in any gala event he's there. And you never say it outright. Like you won't say it up front, but it's the backhanded compliment. It's that smug look on his face.
Oh yeah, we all know the type.
Yeah, no, he would be great. You love to hate him. You love to hate him. But yeah, so those are the big ones that we'll probably see. A good one. This one's gonna be hard. If they'd had one more scene together, what would you want it to be?
Oh damn. That is a hard question.
I know. I have no idea. Mind is blank.
I think I see it as together, like physically together. Mm-hmm. Then I see my brain goes to Dorian on the ship flying away while Celine is waiting for her ship to power back on from the EMP with an unconscious Ross and Dex. And I think I could see Dorian trying to send a message, to put like send a hologram of himself to try and talk to her. But also I see him not hitting the send button. Like he's like, I've done so much harm and it's still so fresh.
Yeah.
And not only that, but then his brain's like, I'm also giving away my location.
I think like I could see his hand like hovering over the send, but then all the consequences start coming up.
Okay. So I kind of see like this moment of like him looking at the world, like
Perfectus.
I sort of see him looking at Perfectus from the ship as he's leaving, and at the same time seeing Celine looking at Perfectus, and then both having like a look of like loss.
Yeah, but one is going towards, I mean, we're both going towards something, but totally different stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I would, okay, now I did have an idea, but I think like a good flashback scene of them together, actually, when they were younger at the beach.
Yeah. Yeah, the beach episode.
That would have been, that if we had another scene, you know, it doesn't have to be current. Flashback scene. We could still do that. Listen, no one's going to stop us.
That's true.
Okay. That was my second question for you.
Okay. This is an interesting one because I was like curious about this because it went back to me thinking like, though, the dice were really in our favor a lot of the time. So yep. I thought about this was during your crash out episode. If Dorian had happened to fail at all his roles to try and like keep Celine from leaving, what would have happened if Celine had left the facility in your mind?
Oh my God.
Like, what if you had wildly succeeded to leave and I had wildly failed to stop you?
Oh, I don't know. It kind of worked out well narratively that my role kind of like either misses or weak hits. I was just playing it as someone who wanted to get out immediately. I don't know. She probably would have went to the gym or something. She just needed time. Like, she needed time away to think. You wanted to like cage her in and force her to sit down and talk. She was like, I don't want to look at you right now.
But I'm also thinking about like, you know, the Greys were there. The media was on the way. Like all this stuff was happening.
I know. In that moment though,
she wasn't thinking about that.
If she would have got away, I'll say, but who knows, because my answer might be different in the moment, but I'm so far away from it now. I'll say for right now that she would have went to the gym. She would have patched up Dex and then just beat the living daylights out of some mannequins or something and just practice until she was bleeding and so sore and she couldn't stand anymore. That's what I'll say.
Okay. I'm always curious about the what ifs if the dice were actually like for you or against you in those moments. So that was the one, the big what if, that was like, what if she had gotten out? Would this have... Because... It did work out that like we managed to roll just well enough to stay there, to leave, and for Dorian to wipe all the data.
Yeah.
So nobody knows what happened. Although that's all moot now, but
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore, but we don't know that in the moment.
That's true, we don't.
How did playing Dorian stretch you as a storyteller or performer?
Playing Dorian forced me into a situation where in plays, I've played characters that have hurt other people. It's, you know, whether it's classic play, modern play, musical, it happens.
Yeah.
But with this level of backing behind it, this level of prep behind it, and those final few episodes where knowing that Dorian had to pull the trigger on betrayal.
Yeah.
And sitting with that. That was an interesting stretch to kind of be like, it was like a Chekhov's gun sort of thing.
It, yeah.
Knew it was going to happen. It's inevitable. and we set it up in the back the flashback episode. He's gonna do it.
I mean, we set it up in session zero.
Well, before, and... we set it up way before. So, like, even I think about, like, episode 7 when I said Dorian's by himself just playing a game, can't think. Yeah. I'm like, that's what I would do. I would sit and try to do anything else but think about the thing that I don't want to do, but that I know I have to do.
Yep.
And that felt very real. And when the moment came, the stress of pulling the trigger was very real. As we talked about, saying you could literally, like, you could, like, taste it coming off of me, like, the stress.
Yes. I can't imagine what your mind... I just imagine your mind, like, if it's like the Inside Out movie.
Yeah.
All the little creatures inside your brain are on fire right now, pressing every button.
Yeah. Or it's more like that with SpongeBob, like, trying to find his name in his brain, like, setting everything on fire. Not knowing what to do.
Yeah. I mean, I had, like, a little bit of an easier task because you also had to do, like, the betrayal and think about, like, the backstabbing of it all. And you're like, I need to help two people that I care about. And this feels horrible. How am I going to do this?
Mm-hmm. Because and he only had one bullet.
Yeah. And you have to stay true to both sides of yourself.
Mm-hmm. So he ended up turning the bullet on himself.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good answer. Okay. Did we ask our three questions each?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to end off on, if there's a season 2, what are you thinking? You know, this is all subject to change, but, like, what are the first ideas popping into your head? What do you want to happen? Who do you want to see?
I think I want to see more of the ins and outs of the Red Rebels, the Red Rebellion. Like, they were pretty much off stage this entire time, but just were all, like, even from the first episode, we're like, they could be a very looming threat because of their numbers.
But we didn't know the numbers.
We didn't know the numbers, and we still don't.
We still don't know the numbers. I mean, it could be an early rebellion, you know?
An early rebellion. And I definitely still want to explore more of Hyperion City. We didn't get to... We only saw the Violet District in a flashback, the Red District in a flashback. We never touched the Bronze District.
We really created something that could work for just, like, a years-long campaign.
Mm-hmm. And there's all this, a lot of stuff in space we didn't explore, like the giant floating god hand, the star, like, there's a lot there. But I think I would like to see a little bit more of exploration happening. And it actually was interesting for me while we were doing the final two episodes, where I think Dorian's journey is going to involve finding out the truth behind, like, the corruption that happens to the Reds. Because I threw that into the dialogue, being like, you know, that there's a correlation between the corruptions and then the Reds that rebel, and the gifts. Yeah, something in the code is off, and we've talked about, like, you know, that there was a rogue AI that was the reason that the humanity came this far away, why the Law of the Seven happened. So I think Dorian's quest is going to involve finding that truth, that old truth, and then
exposing it. I think that's a good like overall series goal.
Mm-hmm.
Because that might be the only thing that's going to break Celine away, if I'm thinking like in the meta brain.
I think that's the personal selfish reason he wants to do it, is to get Celine to believe him.
She would be a powerful ally if she's on your side, and, like, because you already know, like, she's like, gosh, if she believes this hard in, like, the gold stuff, she'll commit to something completely and wholeheartedly. I want to see more ship battles. I want to see more space battles.
Yeah, we got to be more space in general.
Yes. So, but okay, we can open, you know, I don't know how we'll open season 2. I have ideas immediately.
You don't want to open with Celine on Ace Bellerin's talk show?
I thought about that. I'm not kidding, because that would get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are enemy number one, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
You are enemy number one. Like, you remember in Harry Potter when his face is, like, all over?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's movie 7 or something?
Yep.
My idea... Oh, this is too spoilery. But I have cool ideas of just, like, her... walking down a hall in the Praetorium Guard building, and she looks nervous, but we don't know why she's nervous. We don't know where Ross is at, what decision has been made, when it's been made. We know she's walking down a hallway, extremely nervous. And then we fade to black and cut to the opening sequence. That's I have more ideas, but I don't want to spoil it for people to know.
And then there's the whole ramifications, like what happens with the inner politics of the Calvaris family now that like a Calvaris has gone rogue. Like, does that mean like people like your rival or like the politician rival that I had created that hated our father?
Yeah.
You would take that as an opportunity to ruin.
Oh, a lot of people are. It's a bloodbath. Like it's sharks to the water. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of like she looks super nervous. Why is she so nervous? Where's Ross? And then I want to cut and fade to black, and then I want to flash to her and Ross in the ship.
Ooh, okay.
Or I want it to go the other way around. I want it to be this kind of unsure of what decision she made because she has time with Ross on the ship. Does he get her to change her mind? Does he just make her more angry? Why is she nervous?
Yeah, that's the thing. Why is she nervous?
Yeah. So anyway,
it's because Lucinda's down the hall. That's why.
This is her mother's office. She's walking into.
Yeah.
This is normal nervousness.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what I was thinking. More space stuff and exploring districts. Do you think it would be a longer season or same amount? What do you think?
I think the same, if not maybe two more episodes.
Maybe two more.
Yeah. Make it a whole 10.
A good 10. What about bringing in guests?
I think bringing guests would be very fun. And that's, I think, the other reason to stretch it a little longer is to like, let a guest come on to be part of it, because that's the other thing I'm thinking about is obviously Celine and Dorian are not going to begin the series in scenes together. They're going to be separate.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, which is cool.
Yeah, that's going to be
also,
fun.
Yeah.
Because we'll still, like, on the meta side of things, we'll still be playing together.
Yeah. It's just like we facilitate the world for the other person's scenes.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be playing the Reds with you, and I also have this image of Dorian with the Reds, but it's like harsh living, you know, like it's rebellion. Mm-hmm. It's rebellion money. So it's like not much. And I think I kind of want this for him, but it's up to you. But I like this idea of like, it's not that it's all cracked up to be. And we, us both having that realization, like, okay, we kind of got our goals, but like, we still feel absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Like you're like helping the Reds now, but like there's this, something's missing. Like, let's say I do deliver Ross. There's still a hole inside Celine that she's trying to fill now.
Yeah.
We don't feel good.
No. Faith, we feel worse.
Yeah. So, those are some season two ideas. Maybe a couple more episodes, bring on a guest. But yeah, I would say to close this off, at the end of the day, devastating ending, full character bleed, felt horrible, but felt satisfied at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best stories are the ones that hurt.
I know. If we had one word or phrase to describe season one, what would you say?
Oh, boy.
I have mine already.
Oh, do you?
Devastating.
No, dang, that's a good one.
That's my word.
Consequence.
Consequence. It's a good one. But you know, I think we're extremely. I mean, fulfilled is another one that could be said. So, I think just this entire experience was a really well done experience. We learned a lot as players and as GMs on the prep side of things. For me, in terms of editing. Picking the right person to play with and partner with you, because it's really a partnership. If I felt like one of us was doing more work, it's not fair. And
I agree.
I really felt supported in and out of the game, really good communication. So I'm excited for season two, and thank you for being such a good partner.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been an honor and a pleasure and a joy to be a partner with you. And I look forward to the next season and more projects. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so is it official? Listen, we'll say it's official now that there will be a season two, but you know, scheduling demons always come to play.
Oh, yeah, we can say that it is going to come. We're just never going to, we just don't have to say when, because then we don't need to give ourselves a deadline.
Okay, you hear that, people. We don't know when, but we will say we're excited for a season two and more that we can explore.
Hell yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to us during this talk back. And we hope you liked season one. We worked really hard on it. We're really proud of it. And we'll see you in season two. We just don't know when we'll see you in season two, but we'll see you.
But until then, enjoy telling stories too.